Other questions? Oh, Chris has a question.
For you, Lynn.
Oh.
for the plants that you talked about that were not regulated in mm-hmm. Florida or elsewhere, is anything coming about as far as regulation or anything that's going to start to be regulated? Anybody talking about them?
Okay, so Chris asked about the plants that I talked about in Florida that currently aren't regulated. Is there a plan to regulate them? We are trying to get Rotala listed by the state, but in order to do that, we've got to provide a pretty significant amount of documentation. And a number of those species are localized in South Florida. So Rotala is not one of those. It has the potential to grow north of, well, north anywhere. It's been in Alabama. It survived in Alabama, and they killed it by drawing down a lake for 3 years. But a number of the other species, like the Luseola subintegra, it's pretty much a very localized South Florida problem. So the odds of getting anybody to list it would be challenging. Same with the red root floater. It's just in the Peace River and some of the tributaries, but it has not made its way north yet. So until the geographic distribution is bigger, probably nothing will happen.
Yeah, they're all kind of at the end of the watersheds.
Yeah.
Unless somebody introduces them further north, further upstream, they're not really going to take over much more.
Yeah, everything's flowing south. Any other questions? Dayton. Okay, so Dayton has asked about hydrilla management in relation to snail kite habitat. there's a backstory there. We have an endangered Everglades snail kite in Florida. It's federally listed, and it feeds primarily on our native apple snail. We also have an introduced apple snail that the snail kite is able to eat. And Dr. Susan Wild at University of Georgia has identified a cyanobacterium that lives on this hydrilla that causes avian vacuolar myelopathy on birds, including bald eagles and the Everglades snail kite. So the question is, are we not managing hydrilla because the snails eat the hydrilla and the snail kites eat the snails? We're still managing hydrilla. We have to. I mean, there are plenty of other things that the native and introduced snails can eat. And at this point, with the AVM, we don't have a lot of evidence that it's in South Florida because I think it requires a chill. So we're still killing hydrilla as much as we can. We haven't dialed it back to provide a food source for the snails that provide a food source for the snail kites. Is that what you're asking? Okay. There's a little bit of a conflict, and hydrilla is one of those plants. We have conflicts with a number of different stakeholder groups. So we've got the Everglades snail kite. We have duck hunters who want hydrilla because it does encourage ducks, but, you know, in order to kind of satisfy everybody, including, you know, the boaters and the duck hunters and everybody else, you've got to keep hydrilla at about a 30 to 40% density. That's impossible. You can't do it. It cannot be done. If we could keep it at 30% density, we would be heroes, but the problem is you either have to nail it and knock it way back, or it will implode and take over the entire watershed.
Can I ask another question for you, Lynn?
Sorry. Come up to the mic.
The alligator weed, and
yes.
The bugs that eat it,
mm-hmm.
Are those bugs, can they target any other invasive plants, or do any other plants have potential insect?
Okay, so that was Clara asked about the alligator weed flea beetle. So it is a host-specific critter. It only eats alligator weed. It won't eat anything else, so we don't have any issues with it getting on to related species. There are a number of plant species that we do have biocontrol agents for. There are a number that are somewhat effective on hydrilla. We've had great success using a combination of insects and herbicides for water hyacinth control. We have a nasty little vine in Florida called air potato, And we have a brand new beetle that eats those as well and seems to be doing a really great job. So we try to use biocontrol as much as possible using an integrated system. Part of the problem with biocontrol is the herbicide people tend to think of just herbicides, and the critter people tend to think of just critters, and nobody really looks at the impacts of integrating those, and so that's something we're trying to sort of expand on. And I've got a really good relationship with USDA in Fort Lauderdale. They have an invasive plants research lab there that focuses just on biocontrol critters. So we're working together looking at the herbicides and the critters. But there are a number of species that have biocontrol agents. Alligator weed is one of the very most successful. So to the point that if you are out of Florida and the bugs don't overwinter in your state, you can call the Army Corps of Engineers and they will send you Dixie cups of alligator weed flea beetles. Oh. And I can give you the contact information for that person if you want. Any other questions? Well, let's open this up to the business meeting then. Thus endeth the session. Dayton, if you leave, we're going to make you chair-elect. All right, so officially I am finishing my tenure as the chair of the working group. I appreciate all your support. I appreciate everybody for being here. And our new chair for the next year, for 2015-2016, is Chris Marvel. Chris organized our workshop, and I am very, very grateful for that because it just wasn't happening with me. So Chris organized this, and thank you very much. And we need a chair-elect. Volunteers? Come on.
I can do it if nobody else steps up. Mike's going to look up and say, just because I'm interested in this topic, and something that's certainly not going away where I live and work.
Okay. Okay, Mike Snell?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a nomination for Mike Snell to be our chair-elect. Do I hear any objections? Do I hear any other nominations? All in favor? Aye. Okay, welcome aboard, Mike. at this point, I'm gonna pass the meeting off to Chris. Is that okay? Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay, come on up.
All right.
Don't forget, we have a tour tomorrow morning.
All right. Well, first, thank everybody for coming and speaking. I think this was a great group of talks. I'll clap for all the speakers. Of course, we're down to just about the whole speakers here, but. The next meeting next year, it'll be in Atlanta. If anybody has any kind, like this year we had, I guess we had a wide variety of topics. But for next year, is there anything that anybody has that they would like to say as far as topics you'd like to throw up to hear about next year, or speakers that we could possibly ask to come and give talks next year? Does anybody have anything to contribute there, ideas or speakers that... potential speakers for the Atlanta meeting? If not, I will just go to work and find some people myself, so I'll try my best. So, is there any other business that we need to address, Lynn? I mean, I don't think so. We'll need to do the we'll need to complete the report, and I can get with you about that. Okay, yeah, and we'll get that submitted. So we can continue our existence.
I think that's it. I mean, the incoming president of ASHS sent out this SOAR document, Strengths, Opportunities, Aspirations, Results, and he asked that the working groups go through this and talk about it. So, I mean, we can do that. I know very little about it, but it is, I mean, the SOAR is Strengths, Opportunities, Aspirations, Results.